Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. We're not taking live calls. However, we invite you to stay with us and enjoy the broadcast. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
I don't know if you've noticed this, but the internet has a lot of questions about the Catholic faith, and so we devote this hour of Open Forum to answering the internet's questions about the faith. I am Cy Kellett, your host. This is Catholic Answers, and it is Open Forum today, but we won't be taking calls because we're responding to questions that have been posed to us in one place or another on the internet about the Catholic faith. We're taking any question people have. We don't know the religious background of people, so we'll just take them for what they are. We stream the show live almost every day now on Facebook, YouTube, and Periscope. And so we get lots of questions typed in there that we are not able to get to every time we do this show. And so today we will take a selection of those questions and try to get to as many of them as we can. Our guest this hour, Jimmy Akin, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers and the author of A Daily Defense, 365 Days Plus One to Becoming a Better Apologist. Hi, Jimmy Akin.
Howdy. You know, the internet has lots of questions about the Catholic faith, but it also has lots of answers about the Catholic faith, and many of them aren't any good.
That's a very good point.
So you've got to be careful when you go to the internet and ask a question about the Catholic faith or about just about anything for that matter.
I guess so, yeah. But Catholic.com, that's a
Most of the ones there are pretty good.
Yeah. What, most?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's a I think that's a fair assessment.
Not going to claim perfection.
No, and there's not – or infallibility there. But they're pretty good. I suppose you could even say that about the Vatican website. Most of the answers there are, will be right on. There had been talk one time about kind of having like a special domain where these would be like approved Catholic websites, that kind of thing, you know, that had some kind of but that never – you're not aware of anything like that, are you?
No, I'm not aware of anything like that. There's sort of an equivalent to that right now, which is there are various apostolates that operate with ecclesiastical approval, Catholic Answers being one of them.
Yeah.
But nobody has, to my knowledge, on the internet compiled a list of those organizations. There is a list in print form. Here in the United States, there's a book called The Official Catholic Directory, published by P.J. Kennedy and Sons, and it lists all of the different ministries by diocese that are operating with church approval.
So that's pretty reliable. So if you want to see, for example, what's approved of in your diocese, you can go to the directory and you can find your diocese.
Look up your diocese. It'll have the list of the approved ministries in your diocese that are based in your diocese.
Right, right. So a daily defense, I usually try to start with the daily defense question for you, and I'd like to keep up that whenever we do an open forum. And despite the fact that this is an internet open forum and we will be straightening the internet out, let's take a question from your book, A Daily Defense, 365 Days Plus One to Becoming a Better Apologist. Oh, I should probably mention this now. It's on sale at shop.catholic.com because everything's on sale.
Oh, good. Summer sale, right.
Massive summer sale.
So you got to get it on sale before the summer sale ends.
And then it shoots back up to exorbitant price.
Reasonable price.
Okay. All right. Absent from the body. This is day 41. I usually don't go early in the book, so I'm going early in the book this time.
Okay.
Paul said that to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. Therefore, there is no room for purgatory.
Yeah. Okay. So you know how Paul said a lot of things?
Yeah, I did. I was aware of that. Yeah. Paul said a lot of things.
He did not say that one.
Oh, really?
That's not in the Bible at all. There is no passage in Scripture that says to be absent from the body is to be present with Christ. This is a myth. This is a corruption of a verse that is found in the writings of St. Paul. And it
has
been
used. Which is more aspirational, maybe.
No. Well, we'll get into that.
Okay.
But it's used so often as an anti-purgatory proof text that in the minds of many people in the Protestant community, it's become corrupted into this form that would simply define not being in the body as being present with Christ. And that's actually not what Paul says. What Paul says is, I wish to be absent from the body and to be present with Christ, not that one is the same thing as the other.
Right.
And so if you then put flesh on that and say, well, okay, here I am at work. Maybe I would rather be on vacation. I could say, I would rather be away from work and on vacation, you know, or I
could say,
or go home. I could say, I would rather be away from work and present at home.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that to be away from work is to be at home.
No.
I could be all kinds of other places.
Like and traffic around here.
Well, I was going to say, you have some experience of that.
Yeah.
And so
– some daily
I don't
experience.
Have to get on the freeway to go home, but you do. And so traffic jams are something that you're familiar with. And you could – if you want to think of purgatory as the traffic jam into heaven, you know, it's kind of like that actually. It's sort of an occasion to be purified. You know, you're a little delayed in getting into heaven maybe, but it's an occasion of sanctification because that's what purgatory is just the final stage of our sanctification. So problem number one with this claim is that Paul never says this.
Right.
Problem number two is when you look at what he does say, it doesn't rule out the possibility of an intermediate state where you get purified, where you get further sanctified. Third problem is we have no clue how long purgatory takes. And in fact, we're told in Scripture that at the second coming, those who remain alive will be transformed in the twinkling of an eye. So God can sanctify you instantaneously if he wants. And therefore, the church doesn't claim any particular length regarding purgatory. And as a result of that, for example, in his encyclical on Christian hope, Spes Salvi, Pope Benedict XVI said that we can't calculate the duration of purgatory in terms of earthly time. And consequently, if you wanted to say, well, okay, today I'm going to die and just the next instant I'm going to be with God in heaven, okay, fine, maybe you will. But you're still going to get cleaned up on the way to heaven because there ain't going to be no sinning in heaven.
Where is that? Is that your own phrase or does that come from a song?
No, that's me.
Oh, that sounded like that sounded like you should write that song. There ain't going to be no sinning in heaven.
Yeah,
you could do that.
Maybe.
I see where you're going now. But that now raises another question in my mind that I would like to address. This has to do with Pope Benedict. I'm changing topic because you've answered the objection. So now I want to change to something you made me think about Pope Benedict. In his homily at the funeral mass for Pope John Paul II, he got some criticism because he said he referred to the Holy Father being in the house of the Father and waving to us from a window or that kind of thing. And people said, well, how can he know that John Paul, you know, that the Pope just deceased is not in purgatory? And how is he putting him immediately in heaven?
Okay.
And that seems to me is easily resolved if you accept what the Pope Benedict himself believed about that. Earthly time and time after this life, they're not the same thing.
Well, you could resolve the issue that way. However, one could still criticize and say, but that's presupposing an understanding of time may not work the same way and purgatory may not be calculated. Time may not be calculated the same way. Actually, we don't know that. I mean, we can't calculate it in terms of earthly time,
but
that doesn't
be.
Mean yeah. It doesn't take earthly time.
Right.
And so one could say, well, he was oversimplifying and maybe he shouldn't have oversimplified. On the other hand, you know, he had personal experience of John Paul II and his holiness. Meaning his personal holiness, not his holiness referring to his office, but his level of personal holiness. And he may have on that basis formed an assessment that to the extent it can be known that he would feel confident that John Paul II was in heaven very quickly. And that's not contrary to Catholic teaching to form an opinion like that. This is an area where by our own admission we don't know, and so one can form different opinions, and it's at least a pious thought.
Yeah.
One could, and some people did, offer criticism at that point, saying, "Well, but in making such an assessment and in expressing such a pious thought, even if you're not asserting it as a fact, but just as a pious thought, you could discourage people in other situations from praying for their deceased loved ones in purgatory who may need their prayers. And, you know, if in this highly public Catholic funeral, if you don't have anything about let's pray for his soul and just talk as if he's in heaven already, then that could communicate to people in their own circumstances that they can just kind of assume that their relatives are in heaven and don't need any prayers and things like that. And that's, you know, a reasonable subject to consider. I suppose he could come back and say, well, come on, people can understand the difference between, you know,
John Paul II
and Uncle Bob, who, you know, died in a bar fight or something.
Yeah. We've never had a pope die in a bar fight, have we?
Not that I'm aware of.
No, that would that'd be a fascinating bit of history. All right, we're going to straighten the whole internet out today. That's our ambition anyway.
Don't overpromise.
Well, we're going to try to straighten the whole internet out.
You were just talking about Pope Benedict maybe overpromising.
So. Well, okay. All right. We're going to straighten out like five questions from the internet
at least.
And so we'll be right back with Open Forum, all internet version of the Open Forum. We're taking questions from the internet regarding the Catholic faith. Jimmy Akin, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers, is our guest. We'll be right back with more after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn, that one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know that there's a place you can turn first that features the newest, most exciting Catholic resources, as well as a huge selection by some of the best Catholic authors and speakers on the planet? It's our online store at shop.catholic.com. All of our offerings are time-tested and apologist-vetted and trustworthy and faithful to the teachings of the Catholic Church. And, of course, the lights are always on for your shopping convenience. It's one-stop shopping made affordable and easy. Shop.catholic.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Mark 6:17, during a gala birthday banquet, the daughter of Herod's sister-in-law turned wife, Herodias, performed a dance that greatly pleased him. He then promised to give her whatever she asked for. Her mother told her to ask for the head of John the Baptist. The king was deeply distressed over this, for he respected John, but he had made the promise. So John's life was terminated over what seems to have been such a mere trifle. His death was a reminder to Jesus that now the preparation for his coming was past, and his own death was drawing near, a death seemingly no less senseless, and yet the event that was to eclipse the grandeur of the very creation of all that is. A death that means eternal life for you and me. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
We're not taking live calls. However, we invite you to stay with us and enjoy the broadcast. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Open forum today, but it's a special open forum. We're taking all questions from the internet because we have so many people who now watch us or listen. Via internet, and so during the course of the show, we have questions that accumulate, and we have not been able to address them. We do tend to favor the live caller
because they're hanging on the line.
Yeah, because they're holding on the line. So that means that we end up not getting to some of these questions. So today we go with an all internet show. And Jimmy, you ready to take some questions?
Yeah, please.
That's Jimmy Akin, our senior apologist. And we go to Arthi, and his question is:
Arthi is a female?
Is Arthi?
I don't know.
You might be right. Actually, I'm looking at the middle name.
We can see a middle name here too, and the middle name is usually female.
Yeah. Okay. So Arthi asks, I'm just not going to use a pronoun now.
Okay.
How do you defend our saints and people who show absolute contempt to their work? For example, a lot of people are influenced by Christopher Hitchens,
his opinion, that is, of Mother Teresa and say the most awful things. Mm-hmm. Is there an apologetic way around this?
Yeah. So there are a number of things you can do. Now, if somebody is just totally, scornful, if they have a closed mind, if they show, as Arthi says, absolute contempt for their work, then, you know, there may be a limit to what you can do to help them see things in another light. I mean, you know the saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him think. And
Wait a second. Hold on.
Uh-huh.
You definitely can't make a horse think. But well, I do not,
not
believe that that
level.
Is that's the proverb.
Well, I think it's my proverb.
Oh, okay. All right. An Aiken proverb.
It's
okay.
Like there ain't no sinning in heaven, you know.
I think you were testing me to see if I was paying attention.
Nah.
No.
There's a limit to how open-minded people are willing to be, and you have to make a prudential assessment of how open is this person and is it worth my time trying to convince them otherwise, because if they're just dead set and determined to think a certain way, it's not going to be a productive use of your time to try to convince them otherwise. And so I don't advise that you write people off instantly, but, you know, try to mm-hmm. see how open they are. But if they're just absolutely closed, then say, okay, this line of conversation isn't productive. Let's talk about something else or do something else. You know, go find something to do that's productive rather than banging your head on somebody who's not going to yield. So I would say if someone, you know, was bashing Mother Teresa based on something Christopher Hitchens had said, I could imagine saying a number of things. One of the first things I'd say would be, thank God that Jesus Christ saves sinners, because Mother Teresa was a sinner just like all the rest of us, and we all have flaws, wow. You and me included. And so I'm just so thankful that our flaws don't ultimately define us, that we are capable of redemption.
Wow. You know what I heard there? Mm-hmm. A little preaching of the gospel.
Yeah.
That sounded like the gospel to
mm-hmm.
me.
And I phrased it in such a way that it included the person making the criticism.
Yeah.
But it didn't put them on the spot. It also included me
yeah.
in there. So
right.
I'm not putting myself up above anybody else. And that's a good way to preach the gospel, is to both help other people recognize their need for God, but to frankly acknowledge your own as well. Because nobody likes being talked down to. And so that's one of the things I might say. Now, if it led to a broader discussion, I might say, okay, well, I personally am not overly familiar with the details of Mother Teresa's biography. So, you know, Christopher Hitchens may have some points here. She was a human being in a fallen state like all the rest of us, and she would have made some mistakes, and maybe Christopher Hitchens has identified some, maybe even some serious things that she should have done better at.
Mm-hmm.
But what's your point from that? I mean, are you just rejoicing in the fact that somebody was a sinner, or do you have some larger point that you're making? Because certainly, like, if you're wanting to use attacking her as a way of attacking the Catholic faith, well, the Catholic faith never claims that people aren't sinners in this life and
yeah.
that they don't do things. So you're not challenging the Catholic faith. You may be critiquing an individual person, but then we're all subject to critique, including Christopher Hitchens.
Yeah.
In fact, if you read some of the things Christopher Hitchens has written and said, he can be just downright mean-spirited. So he's not a living saint either. And, you know, you want to take that into account when you're assessing anybody, whether it's Mother Teresa or Christopher Hitchens or you or me. Nobody in this life is free from criticism or immune from it. And so we need to understand that and keep that in perspective. We also need to understand the good that people do. I mean, if you just focus on people's negatives, then you're going to have a distorted view of those people and of the world in general.
Right.
If you just focus on negatives. So we need to recognize that not only can Christopher Hitchens be a jerk, he also may have some good points from time to time.
Yeah.
And okay, maybe Mother Teresa made some mistakes, but she's got good points too, mm-hmm. including service to the poorest of the poor in India. Now,
yeah.
maybe you want to say, okay, well, she should have done it different or better or something like that.
Right.
But she still was willing to get down in the muck and the mire and serve people who were dying and who had leprosy and all kinds of things like that.
Right.
If you want to critique, fine, but have you actually done that? And, you know, if you haven't, then you want to at least acknowledge that she was trying. She was doing something good. And so you want to give her her props for that.
Yep. All right. Can I ask you about a specific critique that Hitchens made?
Sure.
All that, I think that's, it's so disarming. I think that's very, very helpful to me to think about it that way. Because I think I would tend to argue in a situation like that. And And maybe I need to correct myself on that. But Hitchens.
Well, actually, so let me give you a line that is from a song there.
Okay.
There is an evangelical recording artist named Mark Hurd,
yep.
Who did a lot of really wonderful music. And surprisingly, even though he was evangelical, he had a very Catholic understanding when you listen to his lyrics. And I don't know that he consciously realized that. He sounds very Catholic in many things,
uh-huh.
but he does. And in one of his songs, which is actually about problems in marriage and how husbands and wives can, you know, have conflict that they need to resolve. He's got some really poetic images in there. He talks about, you know, I'll be the tiger, you can be the tigress. The sharpest fangs won't get us out of this mess. And he's got a bunch of really neat lyrics, but in one of the lines in that song is sometimes it helps to give when the instinct is to take. And I think about that a lot in apologetics when the instinct is to get defensive
right.
and start arguing.
Right.
Sometimes it helps to just gives something to somebody, and it can be very disarming. As St. Paul says, if you return evil for kindness, you will heap hot coals on the head of the person, meaning they'll be very embarrassed
yeah.
that they've come across negative and aggressive when you're being kind and compassionate. What's the criticism?
Well, one from Hitchens is that she was more interested in saving souls than mm-hmm. in actually saving lives.
Okay.
And I wonder what you make of that criticism.
Good for her. I mean, yeah, who wouldn't be? What's wrong with you, Chris?
Maybe he wouldn't phrase it that way. Maybe he'd say, I suppose he would say, more interested in making converts to the mm-hmm. Catholic Church than in saving
well,
lives.
Well, okay, that's interesting because if you wanted to put it that way, because actually one of the criticisms of Mother Teresa that was raised by some in the church and the Christian community more broadly is that she wasn't evangelistic enough, that she, you know, she was in India and she was interacting with a lot of people who were Hindu and serving them, and one of the criticisms is that she didn't aggressively preach the gospel enough to them. But so that's, you know, one point that I think should be considered in answering that. But more fundamentally, from a Christian perspective, we aren't slabs of meat that just stay alive for a few decades. There's a transcendent element to us, and that's in fact why, a big part of why, we have dignity as individuals. If we were just blobs of meat, then we wouldn't have any intrinsic dignity. And so if the fact that Christopher Hitchens recognizes human dignity as something that – and saving human lives as something that Mother Teresa ought to be concerned with itself points to something more about humans than just our carnal side, than just our meatness. In itself, that's a testimony, wittingly or unwittingly, to the human soul. And if we do have a human soul, if we're not just meat, if we do transcend this life, then it makes a lot of sense to say, well, let's be most concerned about where we're going to have most of our existence. And if we're going to have an infinite existence into the future beyond this life, then obviously it makes sense to care more about that future infinite existence than just this temporary existence. As St. Paul said, the sufferings of this present life are not worth comparing to the glory that's going to be revealed to us.
I kind of like that. I gotta read more St. Paul.
Okay, he said a lot of things.
One thing he didn't say, well, we talked about
that.
Yeah,
we talked about that.
We'll be right back to continue to straighten out the internet and give it answers to its questions on the Catholic faith when we come back with Jimmy Akin on Catholic Answers Live.
on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
EWTN is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If your cable or satellite provider doesn't carry EWTN's full programming lineup, give them a call and let them know you would like to receive EWTN 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
For more information, go to EWTN.com and click on television.
As legend tells it, 500 years ago, a disaffected Augustinian priest nailed his 95 theses to the door of the Wittenberg Cathedral. The evidence that he actually did this is pretty thin, but Martin Luther's objections to Catholic teachings concerning purgatory and indulgences set off a series of countless ruptures that the Church suffers to this very day. The faithful Catholic wants to be God's instrument in healing these ruptures, but may not know where to begin. Join us this September 28th to 30th as we tackle the topic at Catholic Answers' 4th National Apologetics Conference, the Reunion of All Christians, a lively and inspiring conference designed to ignite and inform your faith. We've got an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to fire you up. Catholic historian Steve Weidenkopf, apologist Mark Brumley, apologist Devin Rose, plus all of your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. This is an event you don't want to miss. This is where it all begins. Join us this September for a conference that is sure to leave you wanting more. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 1-888-291-8000 today to register. That's CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Open Forum today, of a little bit different sort. Open Forum where we tackle all the questions, or as many as we can, of the questions that come at us from the internet and try to address those. The internet, that place of both enlightenment and, what's the opposite of enlightenment? Endarkenment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Okay, sure.
I swear I thought you were going to have a better word than endarkenment.
Well, there are a number I can think of. Benightedness.
Benightedness, yes.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, sorry. Well, let's go to more questions from the internet. Johnny asks on the internet, why do we have far more Catholics believing in the real presence of the secular world than in the real presence of Christ in the Holy Eucharist? Out of 1.4 billion Catholics, maybe 80 million truly believe Jesus is in the Holy Eucharist. That's an F. Can we get at least to a C? A C minus, he says.
Yeah, actually, he seems to say that's an F minus.
Oh, I just thought that was, yeah, okay. Yeah.
So I want to know what his source of statistics is, because this is not my understanding of things. I suspect that the news is much better than what Johnny may be thinking. And the reason I say that is because back in the 90s, there were a series of news stories about some polling that had been done here in the United States that suggested that only a small percentage of Catholics believed in the Church's teaching regarding the Eucharist and Christ's presence in it. And it was like a really small number. I forget what it was, but, you know, substantially less than 50%. And so there was a bunch of hue and cry about that, including in Catholic circles. You know, it's like, oh, this is terrible. People don't believe in church teaching, blah, 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 blah. They're denying. They think the Eucharist is just a piece of bread, blah, 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 blah. It's not Jesus at all. He's not present. That's what people think. We've done a horrible job in catechesis. The end. Doom and gloom. Dig it.
Yeah.
And you know, certainly in recent years, there have been problems in catechesis. There was, particularly in the 1970s, you know, it was just awful. And in the 1980s too. And things have gradually gotten better, particularly after the release of the Catechism of the Catholic Church. But there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. But these news stories all had a false premise. You know, I mean, I know it may be hard for you to hear this as a former newspaper editor, but a lot of secular news stories that talk about religion don't even get their basic facts right.
I am shocked.
Yeah.
Shocked.
Yeah.
Gambling in a casino?
Exactly. Yeah. A little reference in there to a classic movie for those who are familiar with it.
Yeah.
But the polling that had been done was fundamentally misleading. And when you looked at the questions that were asked in the polling, which I did, none of them – they had – is like, what do you think about the Eucharist? And then they had like four or five options. And none of the options clearly articulated the church's position. And so the Catholics who were answering the question had to pick among different answers, none of which clearly articulated the church's belief.
Oh, yeah.
And different ones caught different aspects of it. Like some of them – I mean the multiple ones in fact would talk about Christ being present, but they didn't like have transubstantiation as a clearly spelled out option here. But several of them talked about Christ's presence. And so the Catholics who were responding to the poll, you know, were having to say, well, none of these, assuming they themselves could articulate it properly, would have to say, well, none of these actually articulate the church's position. So I'm going to pick one that sounds the most like it. And then there were several that sounded kind of like it. And so it effectively split the understanding among those several different options. And so it made it sound like any one option had, you know, had a lower number of respondents, and that made it sound like only a tiny sliver of Catholics understood or believed the church's teaching. And the reality was it was simply terrible polling.
Yeah.
And so if you then added up the different options that all talked about the presence of Christ in the Eucharist in one way or another, way more than 50%. I mean, it wasn't 100%, but you wouldn't expect 100% on anything. But it was way more than 50%. And so I don't know if Johnny has encountered some stories from that era or that polling or some other polling. But out of the more than a billion Catholics, way more than 80 million believe in the real presence. And this is especially true when you consider that much of the Catholic world, in fact, the majority of Catholics in the world, are not found in North America and Western Europe.
Right.
They're found in Africa and Latin America and Asia and Eastern Europe and places that have not suffered from the kind of aggressive secularism that North America and Western Europe have. And so there you're going to find even higher levels of belief. Now, people in those circumstances may or may not be able to articulate transubstantiation clearly and say, okay, Jesus is present, body, blood, soul, and divinity, and the bread and wine are not present anymore in reality, only in appearance.
Yeah.
Okay, that's transubstantiation, roughly. I mean, I could make it even more precise. But they may or may not be able to articulate all that clearly. But in terms of do they believe Jesus is in the Eucharist? Absolutely. That is the majority Catholic opinion, not just in the world in large, but even here in North America,
yeah,
even here in the United States.
And it's probably true throughout the history of the church. Transubstantiation is actually a hard concept. You have to get good catechesis.
It's a fairly sophisticated concept, yeah.
Right. But maybe millions and millions of Christians, even in the Middle Ages where people were, you know, catechized. Now that I said that, I don't know how well catechized people were in the Middle Ages. Mm-hmm. But you do the best you can. But
yeah,
if people know that they're receiving Christ,
right,
then fundamentally they know what they're doing.
Right. And they have the real presence of Christ is the most fundamental thing here. The real absence of bread and wine is important and is a teaching of the faith. But frankly, the fact that Christ is present is more significant than that bread is not present.
Right. Dig it. I think you should end all your answers with dig it now.
Okay.
I like
retro, dude.
Dig it.
Dig
it. Did you know you said dig it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because I think that's a great way. Then I'll know you're done, too.
Oh, okay.
Be like, you just give a good answer and then just go dig it. And then we'll go to the next question. Jessica, also on the internet, asks, do you have to have special training to create sacred art such as icons or holy cards?
If you want them to be good. I mean, it's like anything else, you know, if you want to
dig it.
Yeah. It's like, you know, creating any other kind of art or doing any task just about in order to get really good at something, you got to be bad at it for a while.
Right.
And so it's just like training. If you want to do good art in that form, It's going to require practice, and either and that may or may not involve training under a teacher or set of teachers. Although in most cases it will, most people who teach themselves to be good artists do so with some kind of training. In terms of is it like required in order to produce these, it's going to depend on who your publisher is. I mean, if you decide to self-publish. You make a holy card image or an icon and you just self-publish it, well, then it, only if you require yourself to have special training. Others, though, may. And my understanding is that in the some Eastern traditions where icons are very common and very commonly made, that it is a kind of traditional practice that does require some more training. In fact, it's not even referred to as painting. It's referred to as writing icons. Mm-hmm. And there are a whole bunch of traditions that, frankly, I have not studied that are connected with it. And so I wouldn't be at all surprised if in the icon writing tradition there is a kind of formal training that goes on. Still, though, whether you could write an icon and, you know, have it mass-produced or just give it to somebody, you know, well, you could certainly give it to somebody. In terms of could you have it mass-produced, well, that's going to depend on the publisher.
Yeah.
But there's nothing under canon law here in the West that says you have to have special training to do these things. But some kind of training is obviously a good idea.
Even if you're an autodidact.
Even if you're an autodidact.
Because there are some people who can train themselves to do things, like play a musical instrument or paint or that kind of thing.
Yep.
You're kind of an autodidact.
Yep.
What's that other word we said before? You're a...
Polymath.
Polymath.
That was Chris Check's description of me. But.
Polymath autodidact. Okay. So I think we've got to take a quick break. We're going to straighten the internet out, though. Before we get done with this show, we will have straightened out a few questions about the Catholic faith. Open forum, we take any question we can about the Catholic faith, any question that our listeners have. But today, all the questions are coming from the various internet forums where you might find those questions. Jimmy Akin, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers, is our guest. We'll be right back with more questions from the internet right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Did you know you can book any of our great speakers to speak at your parish or special event? Contact one of our seminar coordinators through the Speakers Bureau section on Catholic.com today to find out more information.
Catholic Answers Live is on EWTN Television.
Hi, this is Cy Kellett. Join me for a show dedicated to Catholic apologetics and evangelization as we connect viewers to prominent leaders in the church today and touch on just about everything relating to the church. Doctrinal issues, family concerns, social issues, evangelization, ethics, you name it.
Catholic Answers Live TV, Friday night, 5:30 Eastern on EWTN Television.
Do you love praying for people? Have you ever wanted to use your gift of prayer to share Jesus with others and build up the body of Christ? Start a public prayer station with St. Paul Street Evangelization. Listen to people's needs, pray with them, or invite them to meet you at church. St. Paul Street Evangelization can help you get started. Find out how at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn. That one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into, or back to, the practice of the Catholic faith. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
We're not taking live calls. However, we invite you to stay with us and enjoy the broadcast. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, open forum internet edition. Jimmy Akin, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers and the author of A Daily Defense, 365 Days Plus One to Becoming a Better Apologist, is our guest answering those questions. And Matthew from the internet, who lives in the internet, Jimmy, says, "Hi, Jimmy. What's a good approach to discussing the faith with a friend who doesn't consider Catholics Christians because he believes the church doesn't preach the gospel?"
Okay, well, you need to find out more information. That's the basic thing. Because it may be that he doesn't recognize that the church, in fact, does preach the gospel, and that a little bit of questioning could help him understand that. For example, there have been this is a well-known phenomenon where, let's say, somebody is raised Catholic, and this is true actually regardless of how you're raised. I mean, this is true of people who are raised Catholic. It's true of people who are raised Protestant. It's true of people who are raised anything. Lots of young people aren't very attentive to their faith.
Ah, yeah.
And
okay.
They're just kind of bored in their community's worship services, which may not be Christian. It may be something else entirely. They're just kind of bored and they're not really paying attention. And then as an adult, they may come to take their faith more seriously. Now, I grew up in an evangelical environment, and so sometimes people who had been raised Catholic and had become evangelicals would say things like, "Oh, the Catholic Church never taught me the gospel. You know, I was never taught the need for, you know, mercy, or that I needed Jesus, or, you know, anything like that." And and at the time, I didn't know any different because I hadn't grown up Catholic, so I never saw what happened at Mass. But then I started going to Mass and learned what actually happened. And so now if somebody said to me, "Oh, I was raised in the church, I went to Catholic schools, I went to Mass all the time, church never taught me about sin or my need for Jesus or God's grace or anything like that," I'd say, "Really? I mean, didn't you at Mass every single week get down on your knees and say, 'Lord, I am not worthy to receive you,
yeah,
but only say the word and my soul shall be healed?' Didn't, you know, you
yeah.
say, 'Lord, have mercy,'
right.
'Christ, have mercy,' 'Lord, have mercy,'
right.
Didn't you say, 'Through my fault, through my fault, through my most grievous fault,' you know, didn't you, I mean, the church put these words in your mouth,
right?
And you said them. So if you're saying the church didn't teach you about these spiritual realities, the problem isn't the church. The problem is you. You were a young slacker who wasn't even paying attention to what was coming out of your own mouth. And so so that kind of awakening can go, "Oh, yeah, I guess the Catholic Church did teach me all these things." Interestingly, the flip side of that, when you hear testimonies from like people who grew up evangelical and then have but kind of nominally, and then they have the conversion, and then they're giving their testimony afterwards and they're saying, "Oh, when I was growing up," they don't blame the church, saying, "Oh, the evangelical church never taught me about the gospel." They'll blame themselves and say, "And I was a young slacker who wasn't paying attention."
Why do you think that is? That's interesting.
I can tell you exactly why it is. It's because there's a kind of anti-Catholic grid that people who are former Catholics that have become evangelical are encouraged to view their prior experience through.
Oh,
and
right.
So rather than blaming themselves like an evangelical who was not devout growing up would, they're taught to blame the Catholic Church for stuff. And there's almost – I've thought about writing an article about this. There's kind of an anti-Catholic script that they're encouraged to internalize and use to describe their prior experience. But when you think about it, the fact is that a lot of young people just aren't devout, and that's not the fault of either church. It's just part of human nature. It's mm-hmm. part of our sinful condition, and thank God many people on both sides of the confessional aisle grow out of it as they get older. So I would say if someone's telling you the Catholic Church doesn't teach the gospel, some further questioning may be in order, I would say is in order, and may turn up something like this, where someone may have been raised Catholic and just wasn't paying attention and a little bit of reminder of things they said and did could help them be aware of that. Now, the situation with this person may be very different, though. The person may be coming, may never have been Catholic, may be coming from a Protestant background and has just been taught the Catholic Church does not teach the gospel. And at that point, what you need to do is find out, well, what do you mean by the gospel? Because if you mean basic stuff like Jesus is God and Jesus is our Savior and by dying for us, he redeemed us from our sins and we need to accept his grace in order to be saved and all these things like that, well, guess what? The Catholic Church teaches all of those. And so if that's what the person means by the gospel, then once you find that out, you can say, hey, guess what? Why don't you come to Mass to me and we'll take notes together and guess what you're going to hear in all the responses we say? Or here's the Catechism of the Catholic Church and here's exactly where it says all this stuff that you're saying is the gospel. So you can help the person that way. Now, it may be that the person has a more specialized understanding of what the gospel is, and there are people, particularly among anti-Catholic apologists in the Protestant community, who have a very narrow, restricted understanding of what the gospel is. For example, they may identify the gospel with justification by faith alone.
I see. Okay? That's the gospel.
That's a very narrow understanding of what the gospel is. But there are a few things that you can do to help the person out in that situation. One of them is to say, well, let's actually do a Bible study on the term gospel. You know, you can get a concordance or some Bible software. Let's look up every occurrence of the term gospel or good news. It means the same thing, but it's different in different translations. Let's look up all the occurrences of gospel or good news and look at how they're described. And when you do that, you find, okay, we find references to the gospel of God, the gospel of Jesus Christ, the gospel of his son, the gospel of grace, things like that. You never find the gospel of justification by faith alone or the gospel of faith alone or anything like that. The content of the gospel, the way the New Testament authors use that term, has to do with the basic facts that we're saved by Jesus and his death on the cross, and it doesn't get into these finer little points. The finer little points are important and worth discussing, but they're simply not what the New Testament authors consider the gospel. Also, and this is another point that you could use to help the person, there's way more convergence on this subject than many people realize. In fact, over the last number of decades, there has been a lot of dialogue between Catholics and various groups of Protestants about the subject of justification. And we've realized that once you start translating from our lingo into your lingo and vice versa, that actually we're in agreement on the substance of all of this, including including justification, including faith. And Catholics even don't have a problem with the formula faith alone, provided you understand it correctly. This is something Pope Benedict XVI pointed out in his audiences on St. Paul, that Luther's formula, faith alone, can be true as long as you understand it as faith that works through love, which is what Paul says counts in Galatians 5. So as a result of all this dialogue, the Catholic Church and the Lutheran World Federation published a joint document in 1999 called the Joint Declaration on the Doctrine of Justification that said, we agree on the substance. We may have some different emphases, some different terminology, but when you clear all that away, we agree on the substance here. And in 2006, that statement was joined by the World Methodist Council.
Mm-hmm.
And just recently in 2017, the World Communion of Reformed Christians joined it. So today you have Catholics, Lutherans, Methodists, and Reformed all agreeing on the doctrine of justification. So even if your friend is one of these people who wants to identify the gospel with the doctrine of justification or some version of it, actually these groups are all in agreement. And they have some differences of emphases, but they're in agreement on the core. And as I said, Catholics don't even have a problem with the formula, faith alone, provided it's understood correctly. And so those are some things that could help your friend out.
Dig it. Thank you, Matthew, for that that question. A question from New Zealand, Jimmy. And I'm just going quickly because I don't want to leave you with little time. Jared from New Zealand asks, my question is about children taking the Eucharist. I am a recent convert. My wife is Protestant. My family, including our three children, go to Mass together once a month and to a Protestant church for the other Sundays. My children are used to taking communion at the Protestant church, and I'm concerned it's wrong. My children are not yet baptized. My question is, should I be stopping them from doing this? This whole issue is a very sore point for us.
Okay. It's understandable that it's a sensitive subject. It has to do with how the children are being raised. And it sounds like your family is in a mixed condition. It may be in a transitional condition where it needs to decide, you know, as to the extent possible as a family, you know, how are we going to proceed in terms of raising the children? Here's what I can tell you. There are several points that are relevant. The first one is, unfortunately, in the Protestant communion, and I don't know which Protestant church you're going to. It could be, if it's in New Zealand, it could be Anglican, it could be Lutheran, it could be Methodist, it could be Reformed, it could be Baptist or Pentecostal or anything. But unfortunately, with very few exceptions, in the Protestant communion, they don't have validly ordained priests. Now, occasionally you might find somebody who's like an ex-Catholic priest or an ex-Orthodox priest that's now a minister. But for the most part, they did not retain the Sacrament of Holy Orders in the Protestant communion. And as a result, they can't validly confect the Eucharist. That means that regardless of how it's viewed in a particular Protestant church, really what they have is a symbolic memorial meal.
Mm-hmm.
They don't actually have Jesus present in the Eucharist in a real, true bodily way. So it's basically a symbol, which many of them, like in the Baptist communities, will say that's all it is just a symbol. And in their community, they're right. That's what it is. And so that would seem to have some implications for the relevance of baptism here. It's been the universal understanding of Christians throughout history that you need to be baptized in order to receive the other sacraments, including the Eucharist. But that's presupposing that the other sacraments are valid. And so if you have what's really just a symbolic service that isn't part of what Christ actually instituted but, you know, has some similarities to it, then the urgency to make sure somebody is baptized is not the same as if this was really Jesus really present in the Eucharist, then you really need to make sure the kids are baptized first. And so so I would say that it's not a great situation. It's not a good situation. But I would say you want to do what you can as a Catholic parent to try to help your children be raised Catholic. And rather than necessarily picking this as the hill you need to deal with right now, look at how you can encourage your wife and your family to be more open to the Catholic Church and maybe one day embrace the fullness of the Catholic faith so they can have access to a valid Eucharist after they're baptized.
Thank you. Thanks, Internet, for all those questions. More Internet questions coming up in our second hour. We will continue in our quest to straighten out the Internet and its questions about the Catholic Church. Jimmy Akin, thanks so much for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
And could you be with us next hour?
Sure.
Or we'll be right back on Catholic Answers Live.